Hello, Nathan Anderson again from RipToIt.com, welcoming everybody to this recording again. I'd like to thank Brian Bash for being on this call and helping out with questions, and welcome everybody to talking with Kurt Christensen from ScientificMarketing.com about AdWords usage and a more advanced discussion of how to use pay-per-click traffic specifically through AdWords sent to sales pages with enormous amounts of testing and tweaking to really produce remarkable results. And I just want to welcome everybody to the call, and thanks for doing this for us again, Kurt. And why don't we just dive right into the topics that we're gonna overview pretty much the whole advanced concepts for doing the system. There's also videos available in Kurt's membership site. So it is a membership site, isn't it, Kurt?
Yeah, it's our advanced AdWords and testing course that the most people who are listening to this call will be going through, so they can watch the videos and things like that and other audios that are available as we go through. So, it's great to be here, Nathan, and glad to be able to do this call as a follow-up call to our first one we did just a little while ago. And so, I mean, let's get right into it in terms of last time we talked, basically gave everyone just a 10,000-foot overview of AdWords and testing and tracking and how this all works. But just to reemphasize how important this is, AdWords or pay-per-click search engines are a skill that will never go out of style, will never go away. I mean, if you think back to the very beginning of the internet, as you know, the commercial internet that we all know, probably, you know, there's not too many people on this call who got on the internet before, you know, Nathan and Brian and I. I think I started doing stuff on the internet in 96, it would have been, or, well, actually 95 on an old 486 computer. You know, they had the dial-up at 14.4 and all that kind of stuff. And the first pay-per-click search engine, I believe, back then it was called GoTo, came out in 1997. So this whole concept of pay-per-click advertising is not a new one. Google AdWords is the current incarnation and, you know, obviously the top dog. But, you know, even if you were to come back and listen to this call in 20 years from now, most likely there's still going to be some form of pay-per-click advertising going on. So this is a timeless skill, and, of course, the great thing, which is fantastic internet marketing, you can apply it for just about any campaign or any product category under the sun. Sure, there's some that are going to be more competitive than others, but when you learn these skills, especially the, you know, skills of AdWords and also of testing and tracking, you can apply it to almost anything. So with that quick introduction, I think last time we left off talking about keyword matching. We're talking about, okay, we generated some keywords, we'd got a campaign started, we'd used dynamic keyword insertion to kind of do a little bit of a cheat there in the beginning to get highly relevant, highly targeted ads. And let's continue on talking about that and explain the whole difference between broad match, exact match, and phrase match. Now, that may seem a little confusing, but all that really means is for every keyword that you have, you should also have that exact same keyword in quotes and also in brackets. Well, what does that all mean? You know, why would you have the same keyword three times? It's simply because Google has a very advanced system that allows you to target exactly how your when your keyword is displayed. For example, if in your keyword list you had the keyword snowboarding, that's by itself is what's called broad match. That means Google takes the liberty that anybody types in anything with the word snowboarding or some related phrase to snowboarding, your ad could pop up. Now, that's good and bad. Well, the good side of it is obviously you're going to get lots of impressions. But what's the bad side of it? I mean, can you guys think of any downfalls of having, you know, using just the keyword snowboarding instead of something more specific?
Well, You want to make sure that you're getting customers that are looking for what you are offering and not just looking for information on the general topic.
Right, exactly. I mean, the problem is it's not targeted. It's not relevant specifically, most likely, to what you're offering. I mean, your ad, you know, say you're selling snowboarding equipment. Your ad is going to show up when someone types in snowboarding sucks, I like water skiing. So obviously not a very targeted user, but because they had the word snowboarding in there, your ad is going to show up. It's also going to show up perhaps when people type in skiing or sledding or any related, whatever Google decides as a synonym or a pretty close match to the word snowboarding. Now, what happens when you put that exact same word snowboarding in quotes? Well, it cuts down on all those synonyms and, you know, whatever thesauruses the Google uses to decide when to show your ad. And now your ad will only show up when somebody specifically types in that exact phrase, snowboarding. And the next step is exact match. That's with the same word with brackets around, not the curly brackets, just the straight brackets. That will only trigger your ad when just that phrase exactly is typed into Google, not when somebody types in snowboarding boards or snowboarding boots, but just when they type in snowboarding. So you have varying levels of exactness in the matching. Now, a lot of people get hung up on this and they try to decide, well, which is going to work best? Well, you're going to find out time and time again that in most cases, the exact match with, that is the phrase with brackets around it, is going to convert the best, by convert as in turn into sales. However, the level of traffic is going to be less. So it's one of those things that you don't know until you actually try it. So any keyword that list that you have, always using, you know, tool like Keywordtopia or Lower Your Bid Price, convert your normal list of keywords into the same list with quotes and the same list with brackets. And you're going to find out that you get more traffic, it's more targeted, and the ROI is much higher. And sometimes you're going to find out that where the broad match phrase doesn't work, the exact match or the phrase match phrase will work.
And it's important in terms of
conversion.
To note, Kurt, that those are, in fact, three different words. You're going to be paying and bidding on all three.
Right, all separately, yep.
Right, and there may be different bid prices because it makes sense if the exact match converts better. Not always, but I found a lot of times the exact match pricing will be different than either the broad match or the phrase match.
Right, absolutely.
People willing to pay more for that.
So the important part of that is not to get caught up in thinking, well, I've got the same keyword three times, but exactly like Brian mentioned, consider them three entirely separate keywords and just, you know, keep it that way in your mind. It makes it much easier to understand and analyze. Each one is going to perform and send a different amount of traffic that converts in a different way to your site. So that brings us to the next topic. We've talked about the matching. That's a must do. I would say fully 80% of AdWords advertisers don't do anything with the matching. They just use the broad match keywords. Now, they're going to get a lot more traffic, but that traffic is not going to convert very well. So let's talk about conversion tracking. Conversion tracking is simply the holy grail of pay-per-click advertising. I mean, that sounds pretty over the top, but it really is. It basically allows you to tell which keyword exactly sends you a sale. Because frankly, you know, for example, in our snowboarding list, if someone types in, ride snowboard bindings, that probably is going to convert it, and I happen to sell snowboard bindings, that's probably going to convert at a different rate and have a different profitability figure than just the phrase snowboarding. So conversion tracking, which is a free tool inside of every Google AdWords account, allows you to tell, okay, on ride snowboarding bindings, we got 100 visitors and we paid 5 cents a visitor, and that resulted in 3 sales. As opposed to on the phrase snowboarding, we got 1,000 visitors and we paid 10 cents a visitor and we got 1 sale. So conversion tracking allows you to tell exactly keyword by keyword, where your sales are coming from. So obviously, the great thing about keyword level tracking is eventually, when you get enough data, you're going to figure out that some keywords, no matter what you do, don't convert for squat. You know, some people say that up to 80% of keywords in a campaign are actually have a negative impact on the campaign, and the other 20% are going gangbusters. And so most people, when they look at that campaign as a whole, they see that it's making money. But if they did keyword level tracking, they'd see that it's highly inefficient and they have tons and tons of keywords that they should get rid of. Have you guys had any experience with that so far? I mean,
that's pretty amazing on my end. I had a couple of products. Can you hear me, by the way?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Okay, I switched to my headset. So in any case, I found it. I put up a bunch of different ebooks for sale with sales letters, and I had one that I sent 1,000 visitors to and hadn't made a single sale. And I went in, and the one thing I hadn't done on that one was to clean up my keyword list and make sure I had the right keywords for that topic selected, and you know, don't pay for the stuff that doesn't work, you know. And once I did that, all of a sudden I started to make sales, which doesn't make any sense to me, because the keywords that are making sales now were in that list before, but hadn't converted yet, I guess. But I eliminated, you know, probably 80% of the traffic in my AdWords campaign and focused on some more very direct searches for the information I was offering, and started to get conversions. And now I know which keywords to, you know, bid higher on or focus more on, and which ones to bid lower on and not worry about because they're not converting anyway. So it's changed it a lot. I went from losing huge amounts of money on one particular ebook to breaking even on it. And now, I know we're going to talk about this a little later, but now I'm making up the difference there on the sales page side, to making sure those visitors are actually being converted into a sale with my sales letter.
And right, exactly. Yeah. So one of the key kind of points to take away when we talk about this conversion tracking is, number one, simply to do it. You know, you need to set it up. It's very easy to set up inside your AdWords campaign. All you have to do is look at the top of your account, and it'll say Google conversion tracking. Click on that link, walk through a little setup thing, and it'll give you a little bit of code. Well, that little bit of code, all you have to do with that is put it on the thank you page or the receipt page that people get to when they do whatever action that you're trying to get them to take. If you're trying to make a sale, you know, you put them on the page that says, thanks for your order. If you're just trying to get a lead, you put it on the page that says, hey, thanks for, you know, joining our newsletter, or, you know, thanks for signing up for more information. And then after that, you'll be fascinated with the results. You can see exactly what keywords are sending you sales and which aren't. My rule on keyword elimination, and this is an important topic, is I give a keyword 300 visitors. Now, on popular keywords, that's not going to take very long. On less popular, less searched for keywords, it's going to take a lot longer. So this isn't a one-time deal where, you know, you go in and eliminate keywords one time. You're going to have to do a weekly or a monthly check to see if you have any keywords. And here's my rule of thumb: any keywords that you've paid for 300 visitors, and you haven't gotten a single conversion, you haven't gotten a single result. Because quite frankly, you know, if on average, if your average conversion, you know, from AdWords traffic is 1% or something like that, you should expect, obviously, you know, after 300 visitors, somewhere around 3 sales. However, if you've gone 300 clicks and 300 visitors and you haven't made a single one, the chances are highly unlikely that keyword will ever work. So what you do, now this is an important point, and we're going to talk a lot more about this, but important point: most people in their AdWords campaign will just simply delete that keyword and stop advertising under that keyword. And that works. Obviously, you know, you're no longer going to spend money on that keyword. But I'd like to offer you kind of an insider secret on that, a way to not only not pay for that keyword, but also to improve your optimize your campaign. Add that keyword that didn't work into your negative keyword list. Now, I don't know if we talked about this last time or not. Did we talk about negative keyword lists like, you know, free and info and stuff like that?
I don't think we covered that, Kurt. Could you talk
okay.
a little more?
Well, yeah, we'll cover that right now then. Okay, obviously, you know, there's certain phrases or certain words that when they're coupled with a normal search phrase, basically, you know, lead you to believe that the people who are doing such a search aren't going to convert into sales. For example, if you're selling a piece of software that writes business plans, you know, and you sell the software for a couple $100 or something like that, one of your keywords would be, you know, business plan software. Okay. Well, there's going to be a number of people that type in free business plan software. And what are the chances are that those people are going to convert into a sale? Well, probably pretty low. You know, you're not looking for the people who are looking for a free solution to the problem. You're looking for somebody who wants to get a business plan written, and they come to your site, they read the features and benefits, and they go ahead and buy it. So in that particular example, you would put free as a negative keyword match. And inside of AdWords, it's very simple. Every campaign, there'll be an option to add negative keywords. Basically, what you do is you'd add free into the negative keyword list. That means your ad would not show up when somebody typed in free business plans or how do I get my business plan written for free, all those kinds of phrases. Now, that's the simplest, most direct explanation of the negative keyword situation. And in almost every industry you can think of, you're going to be able to think of some negative keywords to include just right off the top of your head. It's pretty easy. Well, what's not quite so obvious is that in your keyword research, you pick a keyword and you go ahead and advertise on it and it sends you 300 visitors and you make no sales. You should also add that keyword to your negative keyword list simply because it didn't work. You know that it doesn't work. You have the data right in front of you that keyword is never going to be profitable. You might as well add it into your negative keyword match to prevent some of your other broad match keywords from showing that phrase. And even though you're not advertising on it, it may be matched to one of your broad match keywords. You know, it may be matched to business plan instead of, you know, business plan software, whatever keyword you had that didn't work. Does that make sense to you guys? Did I explain that well enough?
Yeah.
So what's going to happen is you're going to find that the ROI on your site will continue to rise as you use these negative keywords and kind of refine down how often that your ad is shown. A lot of times people on AdWords, they get the mistaken impression, well, I want to get more and more impressions. Well, that's great as long as those more and more impressions turn into, you know, clicks that result in sales. So we're not really so much concerned about impressions or even the amount of clicks that we get. We're concerned about how well those clicks convert into sales and using negative keywords and also conversion tracking to eliminate underperforming keywords is one of the easiest ways to do that. Now, in the beginning of a campaign, you're going to probably do that once a week to weed out keywords that aren't working. After a while, you'll probably only have to do that once a month. So in some of our campaigns, we've seen just by doing that, we saw our impressions go down, the total amount of times that our ad was shown, but the number of clicks remained exactly the same. It was simply that our ad wasn't being shown to viewers that had some funky, free cure for whatever, or, you know, they didn't have a free phrase in there, or one of our other keyword phrases that we found didn't work for whatever that we were selling. So that's a huge one. So definitely positively, you know, check once you get your conversion tracking installed, use that rule of thumb, eliminate keywords and add them to your negative keyword list. Every time you get 300 clicks on it and it doesn't, you know, and no sales result. Basically doing this, you're going to prune down your keyword list over time, and you're only going to have keywords that actually turn into money, which is, you know, what we're all looking for. Because one of the greatest things about AdWords is there's always room for improvement, but there's no real penalty for standing still. For example, if you decide not to work on your AdWords account for a week, most likely you're going to come back and things are going to be exactly the same. But there's always the possibility, if you want to continue to optimize and improve your campaigns. Simply because most of the people who have AdWords campaigns up and running don't maintain their accounts nearly as much as they should. And so just by doing little small things, continue to tweak your ads and in your split tests and your ad groups, you're going to slowly rise to the top. In one of our campaigns, we thought we were doing fantastic when we got up to, we were buying 800 visitors a day. We thought, well, man, we can't get more visitors than that. I mean, that's a lot. But then slowly over time, we rose to 1,000 visitors a day. And now that same campaign is getting 1,500 visitors a day, all of which are converting extremely well, within the bounds of what we're looking for. So,
now are campaigns now getting you up to the number one or number two spots, or are you still trying to focus on 3 and 3 to 7?
Typically, we've been focusing on 3 to 7 just because there is, in most of those campaigns, there's a couple of bigger players in the market that are willing to pay astronomical amounts. And so they usually get, the position spots 1 and 2. But we basically can beat everybody else out, even though we're paying, in most of these cases, like 8 cents a click or something like that, something that's well below what you would expect. But because our click-through rate is so astronomically high, it's in Google's best interest to show our ad and make a little bit less money but get more clicks than to show somebody else's ad.
Right. Yeah, I noticed that I was looking at some heat maps the other day, which is a measurement of where people look on the page when they come to a search results page at Google. And the number 3 spot gets just as much heat as the number 2 spot. And the number 1 spot actually gets less. So that was pretty revealing to me that being over on the number 3 spot, which is the top of the list on the right, is actually a really good place to be.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. Like in that one particular campaign that I'm talking about that we're getting about 1,500 visitors a day, it shows today, as of today, our average position is 3.8 on that campaign. So, yeah, just right in there. That campaign, most of our campaigns, after we get them, when we initially launch the campaign, obviously we want to be on the first page, and we usually typically want to be in spot number 7, simply because it's on average, that means that you're going to be on the first page almost all the time, because, if you're on average in spot number 7, well, that means half the time your ad is above that and half the time it's below that. But once we're in that spot, typically our ads move up the rankings simply because we increase our click-through rate. The other thing that we do that individually monitors and maintains our position is we use a service called IntelliResponse. It's IntelliResponse.com. And what they do is they take the conversion tracking that we've been talking about to the next level. So in the conversion tracking, I can go through and look at every single keyword that I have in a campaign. It'll tell me exactly how much it costs to make a sale from that specific keyword. So I'm just going to open one up just to look at something at random. So I'm going to open up for the last 7 days, a campaign, an ad group for a bronchitis product. And just so you can see the variation in, how much it costs to make a sale. If I can get my browser to respond here. Okay, so here is, this is the information from the Google conversion tracking. The first keyword cost $10.67 to make a sale. The next one cost infinite because it didn't get any sales. The next one cost $7.03. The next two, no sales, $11.58, $3.11, $6.94, and all the way across the board. So on a keyword level, all of these keywords are sending me traffic that's converting at different rates. Now, what you could do and what you should do with Google conversion tracking is once you have an established campaign, you should go in and adjust your bid prices depending on how much it's costing you to make a sale. For example, in this case, it's selling a $27 ebook that has a $10 upsell. So on average, you could say that that each sale is worth $30. So in my mind, how much am I willing to spend to make a $30 sale? Well, it's a digital product. There's no delivery cost or anything like that. So it's all profit. The only cost is the credit card processing. So I'm willing to spend $15 to make a $30 sale. Basically, I'm saying, hey, Google, if you can, you know, I'm basically turning Google into an affiliate. I'm saying, hey, Google, if you can send me a sale for $30, I'll give you half. Well, you could go through just in your AdWords account and adjust your bid prices up and down to try to get to that level. Obviously, you know, if a keyword is sending me sales at the cost of $3 to make a $30 sale, well, what do I want to do? Obviously, I'd like to get more traffic from that keyword, right? And so how would I get more traffic? Well, the simplest way would be to increase the bid. And so you could do all this by hand simply by going in and looking at the past 7 days or the past month and say, okay, this keyword cost me $10 to make a sale, up the bid price. This keyword cost me $20 to make a $30 sale, lower the bid price. Do you see where I'm going with this? This service, IntelliResponse, does that for you automatically.
Do they track so that, Kurt, by using your – how do they get access to your data?
They get access to your data using the Google API.
Okay.
So what happens is, you know, you basically set it up. The Google API, for those of you who are listening to the call, is – APIs are what's the actual definition? It's application.
Application programmer interface.
Okay, there you go. It's basically a way to get the data without having to, you know, sit down at your computer. You basically can get the data in text format or any other format to work with, to have other programs work with it.
But it's pretty
basically
easy.
Kind of a way to. Excuse me.
It's pretty easy. Sorry, Kurt, but it's pretty easy to get that set up with them and not too difficult to get this kind of information?
Yeah. If to get an API account, just log into your AdWords account, and under My Account, there'll be a section that says, you know, request an API key, because everybody who accesses this data this way needs a, you know, separate identification number, and so Google will create this application API key for you. And once you have that, you can use any number of different programs to do different things with your AdWords account. IntelliResponse, their whole philosophy is, like we've been talking about, is that most of your keywords suck and most of them are not sending you sales. So they basically turn every single one of your keywords into, if you like to think about it this way, its own little salesman or its own little affiliate. And you tell it, hey, I only want sales if you can bring them to me at this rate. So in this particular example, that's actually what I have set up. I said my cost per acquisition needs to be $15. So what happens is it tracks every keyword and evaluates every keyword every 200 clicks. And after every 200 clicks, it evaluates it and does a calculation and says, well, if it costs us less than $15 to make sales, let's increase the bid price. If it costs us more than $15 to make these sales, let's decrease the bid price. And it does that automatically without any further input by you. So some of my keyword prices are different as I flip through in here inside of AdWords, simply because this other program, IntelliResponse, is managing the bids now and moving the bids around based on the calculations that it does.
Wow. That's a great tip, Kurt. Thanks for that.
Yeah, no problem.
So for example,
here's an example. The phrase bronchitis with, you know, just broad match just by itself versus the phrase bronchitis remedies in brackets. Which one would you guys guess is going to send visitors that convert at a higher rate?
Remedies.
Yeah, the bronchitis remedies in brackets. Well, sure enough, if I'm looking here in my AdWords account, the bid price for bronchitis remedies is 52 cents. The bid price for bronchitis by itself is 15 cents because the program has figured out, hey, wait a second, when we get visitors that type in bronchitis remedies, they're buyers. And so it's raised the bid price.
But your total cost
so that's a really killer service, it's pretty much unknown. There was another way to do this back through a service called GoToast, which is now called Atlas Search Management, going all the way back to 2000. And we used to use this on a magazine subscription business that I own. And it's one of the biggest time savers you'll ever find. It takes all the emotion and all the guessing out of it. Once you set up a tell response, you just basically say, hey, this is how much I'm willing to pay to get a sale, you know, adjusted if things are out of whack. And it does its business. Now, because it evaluates every time each keyword gets 200 clicks, for some keywords that's going to take a while. But the cool thing is you're probably losing most of your money on inferior keywords, on high traffic keywords that, you know, are probably broad match that aren't converting. And so this allows you to quickly weed those out without any hassle. Okay, so we talked about, intel response, we talked about matching, we talked about conversion tracking. Just want to really emphasize that, you know, however you end up doing your conversion tracking, whether you use a free tool from Google, which is conversion tracking, or you end up going with IntelliResponse, it doesn't matter. The real important thing is that you do it. Because as an example of why you should absolutely positively do this, what is the common theory that people have about the Google's content network versus Google's search network? Now, we'll kind of explain that before we get into that, but When you launch an AdWords campaign, it's actually showing up in three different places by default. The first one is the most obvious and the one that everybody thinks of. Obviously, it's going to show up on google.com when somebody goes there and does a search for bronchitis remedies. That's obvious. That's part of the search network. But it also shows up if you go to places like AOL.com and probably places like AltaVista.com. Those are the search partners. Now, the other place that it shows up, the third place that people most likely haven't thought a lot about, is on the content network. That is the flip side of AdWords, because when Google launched AdWords back in 2001, they thought, hey, this is great. We got millions of people who pay for ads on our site. But then they thought, well, wait a second. If we've got millions of people who will pay for ads on our site, how could we make more money? Well, we could show those millions of people's ads on other people's sites and take a cut of the money. And so in 2003, Google launched a program called AdSense. And AdSense is basically you put a little snippet of code on your website, and when you do that, Google will determine what the page is about and display targeted ads, relevant targeted ads, from Google AdWords advertisers. So basically, you know, it's instead of having just the Google newspaper where, you know, Google owns the newspaper and they run ads in there, Google made deals with all kinds of other newspapers. So that's called the content network. Now, the commonly held theory is that clicks from the content network don't convert. Isn't that what most people will say?
It looks like that on my account.
Right. But the funny thing is you'll read in books on AdWords, you'll read where people say, absolutely positively, when you launch an account, turn off the content network. Don't even bother, you know, displaying your ads on AdSense. It doesn't work. You know, it's never going to work, never has worked, you know, whatever.
I need to correct my comment, because actually it's my click-through rate, which is dismal on the content network, but the visitors actually convert about the same for me. So go ahead.
Right. And so that there's a couple differences on the content network. Well, simply because they're different people. When somebody comes to Google and types in, you know, bronchitis symptoms, and then sees an ad, and then they go click on it, that's one thing. But when people are on the content network, they're not really looking for your site. They happen to come across it. It's the searchers versus, you know, push advertising versus pull advertising. On the content network, you're putting an ad in front of their face that says, hey, are you interested in this? Click here. In the search network, they're the ones who initiated the search. They did a search, and they're looking for results to whatever their problem is. A lot of people automatically assume that the content network flat out doesn't work. That, you know, that it's worthless, which can't, in some cases it's true, but in some cases can't be further from the truth. Let me show you an example. Now, the cool thing is, because you have Google conversion tracking set up, you no longer have to just blindly believe someone when they say, well, the content network doesn't work. You can set it up and track it, because the content network is tracked inside of your Google conversion tracking, just like any keyword. Now, it's not broken down. It just shows you the gross amount. But as an example, I'll just use the bronchitis example again. Let me pull up and find out how much a conversion costs on the content network versus the search network. Okay, so this is this month, and this is for our same campaign that we've been talking about for an ebook on how to cure bronchitis. It's showing me this month, January 1st through January 10th, the Google plus the search network, you know, that's people going to Google and typing in a keyword. It's had 40,000 impressions, and my click-through rate is 4.56. So pretty decent click-through rate. And that turns into, and you know, my average position on the page is 2.4. And that means I've spent $272, and that's costing me $15.11 to make a sale. So important number, it cost me $15.11 to make a sale. You know, what did I say is my goal? Well, $15. So it's right there. It, you know, that campaign's right on. So let's contrast that with the content network. These are ads that are showing up on other people's AdSense sites. I've got slightly more impressions. I got 52,000 impressions versus 40,000 on the search, but my click-through rate is almost half. I only got 1.91% click-through rate. I spent $66, whereas on the search network, I spent $272. But get this, my cost per conversion, $9.52.
Do you have any tips for getting the click-through rate on the content network up? Because, man, mine's just dismal.
Yeah, the content network click-through rate is almost always going to be, well, I mean, a minimum of half of what your search network is. But, you know, and on the search network, we often talk about, you know, your click-through rate has to be high in order to continue to move up and to increase your quality score and things like that. That doesn't really, that's not taken into account on the content network. It actually says that just right on that same page. It says lower CTRs for content ads do not adversely affect your campaign, which basically means don't worry about your click-through rate. Now, there's things you can do to improve your click-through rate. There's a couple different ways to do this. Well, the first thing to do is, remember when we talked about, you know, your average position on a search network, you want to start out in position number 7. That means that you're on the first page. Well, to accomplish the same thing on the content network, you're going to want your average position to probably be 3, simply because most of the time when you show up on an AdSense site, you know, as on somebody else's site, they're going to have a block of 4 ads. Some of the blocks are 3 ads, you know, whatever. But if you adjust your bid prices to be about in position number 3, that means you're going to get the most amount of impressions that are available. Other ways that you can do to increase your click-through rate specifically on the content ads is to create 2 different campaigns with the same list of keywords. In the one campaign, you set it up so that you want to appear on the Google and the search network. And in the other campaign, you have it set up so you appear on the content network. It can be 2 identical campaigns, same keywords, just targeted at different locations. And that way, you can run and test different ads specifically on the content network. You know, ads specifically designed for the content network are probably a little bit more mysterious, a little bit more over the top to get the click. Probably a little less specific, it can be done. I don't typically divide them out, but for example, in this specific case, As of right now, my default bid on the content network is 9 cents, and my default bid on the search network is 7 cents. That's just the way the numbers worked out. It's more profitable on the content network. Well, the other thing is remember when we talked about IntelliResponse, my default bid is 7 cents in this ad group, but IntelliResponse actually can raise and lower the bid prices on the keywords individually as well. So
those are great tips, Kurt. I had no idea that the lower click-through rate didn't affect the overall campaign score, because
no,
it gives you a lot of flexibility in writing different ad types and playing with things across. I mean, you can get a lot of traffic, like your example showed, on the content network for testing and different things, but the click-through rate, like Nathan said, usually isn't that great.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, it basically comes down to, you know, the push versus the pull advertising. I mean,
right,
when somebody goes and does a search on bronchitis remedies, well, they're actively searching that result, you know, the next page that they're given, because that's what they're looking for. In this case, they're going, it's like somebody's reading a magazine and they come across your ad. So, yeah, and, you know, your ads are probably closer to the bottom of the page, or, you know, they're not in an optimal position. They're not at the top of the page like in the search network. So, yeah, don't be overly concerned about the click-through rate, but you can obviously affect it, you know, pretty dramatically by breaking it out and having an entirely separate campaign just for the content network. And you're going to find that in some campaigns, the content network converts horribly, and in other campaigns, it converts better than the search network.
That's great. I have been fed the lines that the content network is just a junk pile, and so I typically ignore it when I'm setting up campaigns. So that's
right. You could see how people could get that impression, because I'm sure there are sections of the content network that are just absolute garbage in terms of, you know, quality of the traffic. But when you're talking about, you know, a topic like, you know, whatever, you know, I don't know, bronchitis, the quality of the traffic is going to be reasonably high, because it's usually much bigger sites. It's like WebMD and sites like that are running the AdSense ads. It's not guys who are specifically running AdSense ads just to make some quick bucks off the clicks. So, you know, obviously, in, you know, like the all-time famous AdSense topic, mesothelioma, I'm sure mesothelioma traffic on the campaign, on the content network, probably doesn't convert nearly as well as on the search network. But, you know, more out of the way topics, like most of the stuff that we're doing anyway, you know, you just got to test it. You know, I have a couple campaign, a couple ad groups that don't work at all on the search network, but do work on the content network. So the exact opposite of, you know, whatever you would call it, conventional wisdom or something like that. And now here's one of the reasons why. It's because on the content, it's on the search network. If you can't make it work at 5 cents a click, you know, your keywords are going to be marked inactive, correct?
Right.
You know, if you go in and say, hey, you know, I'm only willing to bet 3 cents a click. Well, that's not true on the content network. On the content network, it goes all the way down to 1 cent. So, for example, here's an actual ad group. Let's see. Yeah, okay. It's the ad group is for mucus.
Mucus.
Yeah, mucus for this bronchitis product. You know, because people with mucus typically have bronchitis. So, on the Google search network, my default bid is 3 cents, and I've gotten 1,700 clicks. Spent $159, had a CTR, this is just this month, a CTR 6.45, and my cost per conversion, $39.81. So I'm losing money on that particular ad group. But contrast that with the content network. On the content network, I'm paying 3 cents a click. I've got 951 clicks, click-through rate of 1.39, and cost per conversion, $7.13. So,
wow.
I'm not getting a ton of traffic. I'm not getting a ton of traffic because I'm only paying 3 cents a click. But hey, and that actually, in the course of the last 10 days that, you know, that we're doing this, this report for, that's only been $28 in cost And so that's at a cost per conversion of $7.13. To figure out how many sales that is, you just divide the cost, 28, by the cost per conversion, 7. I made 4 sales off of that.
Wow.
So we're not talking a ton of sales, but, you know, multiply that by 3, that's 12 sales a month. You know, that's not bad for, you know, one tiny little ad group on Mucus.
Yeah. Now, to create different ads for the content network than you're using on the search network, you just create a different ad group or a different campaign?
You'd have to create a different campaign.
And then you can turn off the search network and only use the content site network?
Exactly, right.
Okay.
And it's only in campaign settings that you can do that. So, yeah, you'd have to run 2 different campaigns.
Okay.
Which is fine. I mean, that would take, you know, a minute or two. But then, yeah, you could target different kinds of ads that might not work on the search network, but would probably work on the content network. So that brings us to another type of ad or another type of campaign. You know, when people talk about AdWords, they typically are speaking specifically about keyword targeted ads. You know, that means somebody types in this keyword, my ad shows up. Well, there's actually, it's so obvious, it's right there at the top of the page, but nobody really thinks about it. But there's an easy way to run a different type of campaign. It's called site targeted. Site targeted campaigns are, instead of saying, well, I want to appear on the Google search network for these terms, you're basically saying, I want to appear on this major site. They're usually bigger sites. I want to appear on this bigger site, and here's how much I'm willing to pay every time my ad is shown 1,000 times, or CPM. So, for example, we have a campaign. We're trying to attract real estate investors in Spokane, Washington. Okay, so on search, that's going to be kind of tough because you have a pretty limited amount of keywords that indicate that someone is a real estate investor in Spokane, Washington, right? I mean, they'd have to use Spokane and real estate investor in some combination for you to know that they're a real estate investor in here in town. But using what's called site targeted ad campaigns, I've gone out and been able to target specifically people who I know are in Spokane. We have a campaign that runs on our local newspaper site, which is the Spokesman Review, because the Spokesman Review sells their ads through the site targeted. And they're willing, and I pay $1 CPM. It means I pay $1 every time one time that my ad is shown 1,000 times. And here's the results from this so far. Let me pull it up. Okay, so yeah, we're paying $1 CPM. Our ad has appeared 128,000 times, 128,000 impressions. So that's a cost of, you know, roughly $128. For that, we got 151 clicks, and that converted into, it looks like, it converted into 5 leads. And those 5 leads, it shows it costs us about $35 a lead. So that's a campaign, that's an example. Previously to this, it was costing us closer to $200 a lead to get the same quality of leads. So this is a work in progress. It's nowhere near optimized or anything like that, but it's up and going, and it's doing something. And that's using site targeted. The only place that this ad appears is on if you go to spokesmanreview.com and flip through those pages and look at enough pages, you'll see that ad that basically says, you know, average Joe real estate investor makes big money investing in Spokane real estate, free info.
Right. So I have one tip for that site targeted thing, by the way.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've used site targeted for a number of different campaigns over the years, and at one point I had one just setting up running for all the time just to bring me leads to an opt-in, and suddenly I noticed on my charge account that I had like 3 different charges for $2,000 a piece from Google, and
yep,
I hadn't logged into AdWords in a while. You know, it'd been a couple. And I was like, whoa, what's going on? And I went back and looked, and one of these sites that where my sites where my ads were appearing, I went from ad showing getting 100 page views a day and 3 clicks to getting several million page views a day and 3 clicks.
Oh wow! Yeah, yeah.
So that tells you what they were doing. They were throwing junk traffic or a robot at their site and making more money off of it because it's, you know, they're paid per view. And,
right. Exactly.
I turned around and contacted AdWords and said, hey, this is obviously a ripoff. And they turned around and like within a day had credited me back all that money. So they will take care of it, but you do need to pay attention to those.
Yeah, exactly. The site targeted is, I mean, there's a massive amount of advertising inventory. Like when you go into set up a site targeted campaign, you'll be astounded at how many impressions you can buy. and that's what you're buying is an impression. So obviously when you write ads for those, you need to write them very differently than you write them when you're paying per click. When you write for impressions, you're just trying to get everybody and anybody to click on that link because you're paying for it no matter what. Yep. So any other questions or comments or things we should cover on the content versus search network and the site targeted versus keyword targeted campaigns?
On the site targeted ads, Kurt, can you set a daily budget like you can with keyword targeted?
Let's see. I believe so.
What Nathan had happened, you could avoid?
Yeah.
Let me check it real quick. I'm looking at one. I can't recall the answer to that specifically, but it should tell me right in here.
Yeah, I don't remember if I'd had that set up right or not. But,
yep. You can set like this one has a $1,000 a day budget, and then you also set the CPM that you're willing to pay. So, yeah, you can set it two different ways.
Great.
And, you know, the crazy thing is it kind of depends on your topic, but you can find pretty targeted topics, you know, that you wouldn't expect. For example, we have also a product on knee pain, and you think, well, okay, that's great, but you're not going to find a whole site just on knee pain. Well, we found 7 sites that's all they were about was about, you know, curing knee pain. So of course, you know, we're testing ads, running ads on those sites as well. The other, you know, and that brings up an important point with the site targeted, ads, your ads run across the entire site. So you got to be pretty careful to make sure that you're picking the right sites to appear on. For example, for my knee problem one, I could have ads appear on WebMD, but that probably won't do me much good because WebMD is about much more than just knee problems. So you kind of have to go through that and play around with that. The site targeted is once you get a process that works, it's an easy way to really, really roll it out. But it's also a little bit more, it's a harder game to play. So if you're going to do site targeted, take it slow. Okay, let's see, what was the next topic of things that we wanted to talk about? How long have we been going on this call so far, Nathan, do you think?
Quite a while, but we really do need to get into making your sales page convert better. So
okay, we've covered negative keywords. The other things I have on my list to cover are still, like you mentioned, sales letter optimization, campaign timing, and knocking yourself off. So let's cover those real quickly, and then we'll get into sales letter optimization.
Okay, we've been going about 50 minutes so far, so just so you know where we're at.
Okay, great. Let's talk about knocking yourself off. This is more of an advanced tactic. Once you have a campaign that's up and pretty stable and you can't seem to find more traffic, you can't seem to optimize your ads anymore, you're kind of at, you know, you've got what you've got. You know, in most cases, you'll probably have a campaign where you're spending $1,000 or $2,000 a month and you're making, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 a month in sales. So that's good. You know, don't do this until you have an established process that absolutely positively, you know, puts cash in your bank account every day. But knocking yourself off is the easiest way to get to the next level. If you think about it, in, you know, for example, in my bronchitis example, There's how many ads on the first page? Well, there's either 8 or 10, you know, depending on whether they Google puts the two on the left or, you know, just has the ad block on the right. So there's either, you know, I've got either 7 or 9 different competitors that are also spending probably a couple $1,000s a month and making a reasonable amount of money. And they probably, you know, they're probably happy with that and they're happy with their share. But what could I do to get a bigger share? I mean, I just want what's fair. I just want more than my share, right? So the easiest way to do that is with the strategy called the knockoff. That's where if you have multiple AdWords accounts, which is relatively simple, there's no restrictions against having another AdWords account, buy another domain, create another version of your sales letter, use a slightly different list of keywords or even the same list of keywords, use slightly different AdWords ads, and shazam. Now all of a sudden, instead of having one ad on the first page, which you're making $3,000 to $4,000 a month with, now you have 2 ads on the first page. Predictably, what's going to happen? You're going to most likely almost double the amount of money that you're making. Now, I say almost double simply because in most cases you're probably making a little bit less because you're going to have the occasional person that clicks on both of your links before you, they go ahead and make a purchase or something like that. But that's why, you know, I had the caveat at the beginning. Make sure that you only do this with established campaigns that you absolutely know rock solid make money. Because when you do this, you're basically going to multiply your costs, and hopefully you're going to multiply your profit.
Now, are you doing this with your bronchitis example?
Yes, we are. And we've just started it probably, the beginning of this month. And the thing with, obviously, AdWords that we've talked about before, when you initially launch a campaign, it's a little bit slow going. So it takes a little bit of time for the campaign to get traction, to really get full speed. But here's the funny thing, in our established campaign, it's showing us that there's, you know, over 80,000 impressions a day for this group of keywords. In our new campaign, which uses exactly the same list of keywords, it's showing us that there's only 20,000 impressions a day so far. That number will continue to go up as Google, you know, gives us a higher and higher quality score as we become more established. But looks like it'll take two or three weeks. And then we'll essentially, from that one project, have almost doubled the amount of money that we're making simply by knocking ourselves off. A lot of times people in business are often worried, oh, well, what happens if my competitor knocks me off? Well, the easiest way to prevent that, do it yourself and make the money.
That's awesome.
And Google has no problem with multiple AdWords accounts, so.
Yeah, they have no problem. I mean.
Just rock away. You could, potentially knock yourself off multiple times.
Right. Now, you might have some issues if you're using exactly the same sales letter, with the exact same font and everything. But that brings us to our next topic that we're going to talk about in terms of doing multivariable testing. There's no reason why you couldn't, you know, come up with some alteration of your sales letter with a different headline, different intros, and, you know, different layout. You know, it's essentially the same core sales letter. But to the, you know, to the quick glance and the quick observer, it's, you know, it's an entirely different product.
So you could actually, if you've got web designers on staff or you're using outsourcing, you could just say, okay, I need an entirely different version of this site. Give me a new sales letter, give me a new cover for my ebook, and with a different name, and you wouldn't have to actually do all that work yourself.
Absolutely, yep. And it's something for the time invested has an extremely high return. You know, because you've already proven that this campaign works. You just say, you're basically saying, well, you know, I want 2 spots at the table instead of 1. Okay, so let's
you're gaining a little weight there, though, Kurt.
Well, of course, you know, maybe you'll have to eat more diet food if you're gonna do that, more diet soda. One last thing on the AdWords before we get into the split testing. This is something that we've recently been trying. And it has my 90% confidence that it's working. Not 100%, we haven't been running that long, but it's a topic called campaign timing. That's where you can choose to run your ads only at certain times of the day or on certain days of the week. Obviously, it makes sense for some businesses more than others. You know, if you know that your target market that buys like crazy is only online in the afternoon, just show your ads in the afternoon. One thing that people get caught up with in pay-per-click advertising is click fraud. You know, they have this overwhelming fear that, you know, their competitors or somebody's out there clicking on their ads. Well, they've done studies and they've shown that most of the click fraud that occurs between 12:15 a.m. and 3:45 a.m. I'm thinking those are the right times. Let me look up on my actual account. Eastern time. That's because most of the click fraud is done with computerized pieces of software. And for whatever, you know, they choose to do that at certain times of the night. So one of the things that we're testing out right now is we don't display any of our ads from 3:45 a.m. Eastern time. Well, excuse me, I'm converting the time from Eastern time to Pacific. We don't show our ads from, 12:45 p.m. to 3:45 a.m. And what that's done is it's dropped our click prices by about, say, 10%.
Wow.
And it's dropped our sales exactly zero. So that might be something you might want to try. You can just turn on ad scheduling and do it for any campaign that you want. And you just basically say, hey, don't run the ads at those times that we talked about in the middle of the night. And, you know, test it. Keep track and see, you know, if it makes a difference for your campaign or not. Most likely it will. And the more competitive market that you're in, the more likely it'll have a big impact. You know, if you're doing something in the web hosting market or MLM or something like that, you could be pretty sure that somebody in that market is doing some click fraud somewhere to run up their competitor's
right.
account. So easiest way to avoid that, don't have your ads shown in the middle of the night. Go ahead, Nathan. Sorry, what were you saying?
You mentioned that last time when we talked, and I activated that on my accounts. And, my stuff isn't very competitive, so I didn't notice a big difference. But my number of sales didn't go down at all. So.
Right, absolutely, right. Okay, so let's talk about sales letter optimization. And last time, did we mention the multivariable tool that we use, Split Test Accelerator?
I think you mentioned it, Kurt. Yeah, but we didn't really go into it.
Yeah, I highly recommend that you use a piece of software called Split Test Accelerator by a guy named Jim Stone. And for members of the course, that's one of the included pieces of software. It's a phenomenally easy-to-use tool that allows you to take split testing to the next level. Now, we've talked about split testing. We've talked about basically the confidence intervals. Just to review that real quickly, a lot of people, when they do split testing, they start out and they run ad A versus ad B, but then they don't have any mathematical certainty when they decide that ad A or ad B is better. They just arbitrarily decide when to stop. You know, ad A may have made 7 sales or 7 clicks, and ad B may have made 5 clicks, and they just arbitrarily decide, okay, ad A is better. Well, we all know, like we've talked about, you need to make sure that is mathematically sound. The easiest way to do that is to go to splittester.com, type in your numbers, and it'll give you the rule is called the chi-square statistics rule. It'll tell you how certain you are that ad A is better than ad B. Okay, so we've also been talked about doing split testing inside of your ad groups using a piece of software called Winner Alert, which automatically logs in using the Google API, logs into your AdWords account, and does that calculation on every single ad group that you have. That's why we highly recommend at all times, always, always, always have 2 ads running in every single ad group so that you can get your data and constantly and consistently improve your click-through rate. So we've talked about the AdWords side. Well, let's talk about, once we get the traffic, we also need to test and track what happens with that traffic. And so the simplest way to do that we could simply do a split test of sales letter A versus sales letter B. And after a period of time, we would know conclusively, following the mathematical formula, that ad A is better than B or ad B is better than A. But there is a shortcut, and that shortcut is called multivariate testing, and that's where you can test multiple sales letters, multiple elements of a sales letter all at the same time. Most of the tests that we do are what's called Taguchi 3x4 tests, which basically mean we have four different elements that we test, and in each of those elements we have three different options. What happens is how you get this to work inside the software is you basically you go in and say create a new campaign, and you tell it, okay, I want to do a T3x4, and it'll ask you, well, what are the names of your four variables? And then you plug in the HTML code that you want for the three different options. And when you're done, you hit upload and it starts running. It's simple as that. And then as time goes by, usually takes about a week or so, depending on your level of traffic, you'll begin to see that some elements of your sales letter are performing much, much better than other elements. For example, here's a current test that I'm running. It's for on a bronchitis project. I'll just read off to you the number of sales, but I'm testing three different pictures, as in, you know, the picture that appears at the top of the sales page. The first, the control or option number one is my picture, which actually won a previous test. But so far, splitting the traffic evenly, my picture has made 11 sales. Picture number two has made 24 sales, and picture number three has made 22 sales. So, you know, that's a huge difference. I mean, it's double the response. So in this case, it's statistically significant that my picture is not going to be the winner long term.
Does that make you feel bad, Kurt?
No, that's good. I was trying to find a picture that beat mine so I could take my picture off. Because in the first round of tests that I did, my picture beat out two other pictures. So this is a constant and gradual improvement. You know, it's currently showing me that if all these elements work out, my control, my new control with all these, you know, the best of each element is going to be 0.97%. My control piece for this sales letter typically converts at 0.79%. So all of a sudden, this is a 20% improvement just for setting up a little test that, you know, that took me all of 20 minutes to set up. And that's a 20% improvement that lasts forever. This is actually the second round of tests. The first round of tests I did gave me a 25% improvement. So all of a sudden in running two tests, I'm going to almost double the conversion rate of the sales letter. So it's multivariate tracking. For a lot of people, you know, they think it goes over their heads, but as long as you know the concept that we talked about of the confidence interval, how confident you are that the winner is really the winner, and have the ability to cut and paste HTML, you can do it. You can set up multivariable tests that work flawlessly. Not all the time, or you're going to get huge leaps in improvement. But unlike split testing, the problem with split testing is that you may have a string where you create and write and split test five or ten different sales letters that offer no improvement at all. The benefit of multivariable testing is, because you're testing so many different things, the chances are very high that you're going to get at least a slight improvement every single time you run a test. So it's much more motivating to do the test when you're always going to make at least a little bit of improvement. Now, you can never predict where the improvement is going to come from. That's the hard thing. In this specific test, the reason I was running this test was I was testing a graphic as a headline instead of, you know, the plain text. So I basically took the same graph, you know, the same text, and converted into a graphic that was maybe a little bit more catching to the eye. And then the third option was that same graphic, and I circled it with yellow highlighter so it looked like handwritten. Well, here's the results. The control has made, as in the old fashioned, the simple one, has made 22 sales. Option number two has made 21 sales. And my favorite option, the option that I thought would absolutely, you know, knock the ball out of the park, has made 14 sales.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's the power of this medium, though, right, Kurt? I mean, all this testing sounds like a lot of work, or, you know, kind of a pain, or or whatever to pay attention to, but you can't predict what's going to trigger people to take the action that you want them to do. But the cool thing with our medium is that you can track it and track it fast.
And you can make it so it's not nearly as painful as most people like to think it is. It's actually very simple once you set it up. You know, basically now it takes me all of 15 minutes to launch and run a new test. And on average, I'm finding about a 20% improvement in the conversion rate. So, you know, how much would you pay? You know, so let's put this in perspective. On this bronchitis product, let me pull out my calculator and do some quick math. We'll just use round down, but I'm basically buying 30,000 visitors a month. You know, if I buy 1,000 a day, previously when I first started out, I was doing, 30,000, 1, 2, 3. I was doing a 0.5% conversion. So I was doing 150 sales a month. Now, with this current sales letter at 0.97, that turns into 291. So by running two tests, and those are rough numbers, those aren't entirely accurate. By running two tests that took me, you know, maybe an hour or two to set up, and you know, I monitor them all the time just for fun. But I went from doing 150 sales a month on this product all the way to 291 with no additional cost, no cash outlay, and nothing other than my time of setting up a multivariable test. And frankly, you know, they're quite simple to set up. Once you've done the first one or two, it's a piece of cake, and you'll become hooked on the process because, you know, the process of continual improvement at no cost to you is pretty enticing.
And that's not just an improvement for this month. That's from now on.
Right. Yeah, that's an improvement forever. And obviously, once your sales letter converts better, well, you can afford to pay much more money for your traffic. So now all of a sudden, it's what you call a vicious cycle in a good way. Your sales conversion increases, so you can buy more traffic. Now, because you're buying more traffic, you go back and run another test to increase your conversion, then you can buy more traffic. So you're constantly increasing, the number of sales you get because you're increasing your AdWords conversion rate and you're increasing your sales letter conversion rate.
Right. It's the Japanese concept of Kaizen, where you're constantly and never-endingly improving everything.
Yep, exactly. Yep, obviously. It's huge improvements.
And the cool part about the multivariable part, for the people like me who are geeks and for people that aren't, is it essentially just helps you get the testing done quicker. You can test multiple things at one time rather than just split testing. And that's hugely powerful because the faster you can improve or fail, the faster you get closer to the result that you want.
Right, exactly. I mean, every day that you spend not doing testing, you're leaving money on the table. You know, for some people, it's more powerful to think about it that way. And the faster you can test, the faster you're going to get results. The faster you can skyrocket past your competition, because I guarantee you, your competition isn't doing these things.
Wow, it's just really powerful, man. What else did you want to cover today?
I think that is about, that's everything I had on my list to cover on this advanced call. Did you guys have questions you wanted covered that we can have on the recording for everyone else's benefit as well?
One thing that I'd really like to know, and I was setting up my split test accelerator on one site, and I used the 3-2-2-2-2-2, whatever, however many is, like what you can test 8 things or something.
Right.
I was kind of running out of ideas for what to test. What have you found are the most important things to test beyond just the headline and the price?
Okay. Let's see. Let me get my list here. I can tell you what things I test. Headline, the picture that appears on the sales page. And if you don't have a picture, you can put one on, from the pen name of the author or whatever. That improves conversion. The subhead, the superhead. Let's see what else I have in here we can look up. The price. The background color, whether you have a banner at the top or not, you know, like a graphical banner.
I know Terry Dean used to test that. What have your results been?
No banner in almost every case.
Wow.
Let's see, I'm pulling up some other tests to see what other things we've tested. Well, a lot of times we get stuck in, we concentrate a lot on the headline just because that's the most obvious one. The offer down at the bottom, how the guarantee is worded, and also the area that leads you to click on the link, whether to have a drop cap, the big character, in the front of the word. We've tested that. That makes a huge difference.
Explain that again, Kurt, the last point. What's a
drop cap?
Mm-hmm.
The drop cap is like when you start reading a fairy tale or whatever, it has once upon a time, and the O is huge.
Oh, I see. Great.
Yeah, that's drop cap. You can test that. That's one of the things that we've seen that's made a difference. The font of the text, the font of the headline, the color of the headline, the color of the background is a huge one. The size of the page, as in the width, we've tested, 450, 600, 640, 680.
Well, I'd never think that the width of the page would make any difference at all.
Yeah, you wouldn't think, but I guess it just goes to people assuming whether the text is going to be readable or not, whether it looks easy to read.
Wow.
Of those, the headline makes the most difference. The picture was probably second. The background color is up there. The price, not so much. So, that leads us to believe that you can charge more for ebooks than you normally would, and it's not going to affect your sales percentage. You'll make more money just by increasing the price.
Wow, that's a good list to get us going.
And then we're going to switch to what's called the name squeeze model, where we capture the name and email address before we send them to the sales letter. And there'll be gazillions of factors on that that will affect it. Whether you have like a little pointy hand circled, a box that looks like it was circled by hand, yellow highlighting, all those sorts of things. And the great thing about testing opt-in pages where the result is either an opt-in or not, is because the conversion rate is so much higher, you're talking about something that's 20 or 30%, your tests are done so much more quicker than when you're testing, whether a sale is made or not, because whether a sale is made or not is going to be in the 1%, 2%, 3% range. But when you get 20 or 30% opt-in rate, you can quickly cycle through different options and figure out what's the best in there. So it's relatively easy to take an opt-in percentage from 10, 20% up to 30, 40% in a week.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, your visitor value then goes way up, and your cost per what you want goes down. That's a great tip.
I just look back at all the money I've spent on AdWords over the last few years, and I almost want to cry. Because I haven't been doing this stuff,
Well, the main thought in the back of my head this whole time has been back when I was spending on a particular site I owned, I was spending easily in the five figures in pay-per-click per month. And I wish I could go back and have these calls at that time. Not all of the features and functions were available in AdWords at that time, but I'm sure a lot of them were. And I can't imagine how much money I've given away to Google.
Oh, yeah. The more you improve it, the more you can afford to spend. It's like we talked about, it's the cycle of, it would be great to spend $1 million as long as it made you $3 million.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, I appreciate all this information, Kurt. This is invaluable for people who are doing business online. This has revolutionized a lot of what I'm doing and made a lot more things open to me too. I never wanted to invest in AdWords for certain things because I thought, that's just too much of a risk because I've spent a lot of money on AdWords and I don't want to risk a whole bunch of money on some concept and not have a good return. But man, I can step into a lot of different areas now with the confidence of knowing that I will be able to make it pay. So that's really great for and freeing for me too. So I really appreciate this.
Yeah, no problem. Absolutely. is going to be a great use for my customers as well, getting them into the, you know, the whole mindset of AdWords and testing how it all works.
Awesome.
All right, we'll talk to you both soon. Thanks so much for your time, and best of luck on AdWords, and keep those thoughts and ideas coming in.
All right, thanks, man.
Thanks, Kurt.
All right, bye.